Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for August 9th, 2015. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Greetings from Atlanta.
And welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
I just got one question. Where do we start this week? We know we're going to be at 7:20. Robert Hooks is going to join us from Mississippi, and Mississippi made news this week. Planning on having Robert on anyway, but then they had the primary election, which made it all the better that we called on him. And about 20 minutes into the show, he'll come on. But until then, we'll be busy because there were debates, there were red state conventions, there were controversies, and there were more polls than the plumbing aisle at Home Depot. It was just something else. I sent the two of y'all poll after poll after poll, but I guess we got to start with the debate and the fallout on Thursday. Actually, it was two debates. It was the empty house. I guess there were more people on stage than the audience, and one person clearly came out the winner, and that was former Hewlett-Packard CEO Carly Farina. Tim, I know you watched both debates. Kind of be our expert on that first debate, other than it was an empty audience. I mean, Tim, you could have had a whole row if you'd have gone to Cleveland.
Yeah, really. And that was the first thing I noticed as soon as it started, David. Every time they would show the announcers, you know, with the camera that they show them head on from the stage, you just had an empty arena behind you. When the people were introduced, the candidates were introduced, you could audibly make out each individual person that was saying yay and clapping. That's how few people there were in there. And yes, Carly Fiorina shone. She clearly won the first debate. She stayed on point. She talked issues. When she attacked the opposite party. Personally, I think, now Catherine, I think, will probably agree with me on this, just from a policy standpoint, just from a debate standpoint, I think it was better than the second debate. Don't you, Catherine?
I did not watch the first one.
No.
I was not home. I was working late, so I missed the first one.
Well,
everybody says she was really good.
Yeah, and the whole thing was better. Each candidate there tried to address issues. Even Rick Perry talked some without stumbling over himself.
Was he wearing his glasses?
He was, and
okay,
he
I
was
think
standing.
When he wears his glasses, he's more. He's more articulate.
He was standing right in the, he was at the middle one of the seven, standing right in the middle with Fiorina to his left. And I thought he did okay, but she was clearly the winner of that first debate.
Yeah, and actually I think they probably aligned that first debate like they did the main event. And if you were the 11th place person in the polls, you got the prime spot. The 12th place got on one side and the 13th on the other. Because you noticed that the big debate, they had set it up that way. So you knew by their location who was doing better in the polls. One thing I wondered is that thing was on 5 o'clock Eastern time. That would have been, what, 2 o'clock? I'm trying to do my conversion. 2 o'clock Pacific. Mountain, you know, you keep going through. So Catherine said she had to work late at work. That means from the central time zone over, that would be during any 9-to-5ers work hours. I mean, in almost any job in the Pacific time zone, it was during work. I couldn't figure out why didn't they just do that debate at, say, 7 to 8? Then they would have had a break between 8 and 9 to, you know, wrap that up for a few minutes, preview the other one. I mean, I don't know what they show at 7 to 8 on Fox News, but one would think that even the curtain jerker debate would have been better than whatever they normally program. Do either one of y'all know what they show at that time of day?
I don't,
no.
But I imagine they probably did, you know, pre-debate fall draw, you know, like
yeah.
What you're going
to
hear tonight.
Gave them an hour to do that, though.
Happen. Yeah.
Yeah, but it would have given them 8
or
9.
I think 5 o'clock was ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. I had another idea. If they could have somehow.
I think they were just trying to make it like the kids' table, you know, they were trying to make it as insignificant as they could while still giving them some time.
Well, I mean, I know, and I've worked in television, and now we're on, you know, radio, and we understand ratings, and if we can make something bigger, it's going to get us better ratings. And to me, if you would have done this, if they would have said, okay, spots 1 through 9 are set for the big debate, now we're going to have 10 through whoever go to the little debate, and we're going to judge that first debate. And the person that does the best, and we can have a panel of debate judges, you know, people that officially, you know, judge these kind of things, so it's not just a popularity contest and you round up your supporters. The person that does the best, they get the 10th spot, whether they're the 17th candidate in the polls or the 10th or the 11th. The one that does the best gets to go to the big debate. Then more eyeballs will watch it. It means more viewers. For Fox, they get to charge Life Alert and the gold bullion people. They get to charge them more money.
They'd never get away
else.
With that. They'd never get away with giving someone two opportunities in the same night.
But if you earned it, I thought that was what the Republican Party was all about. You earning your way. No free handouts.
Yeah, right.
You got to earn it.
But if nothing else, why would they not move that first debate to a little bit later? Why not have it from, say, 7:30 to 8:30? Already have the people in the arena so that the arena's full. I'm sure everybody would have been glad to show up. Take a half-hour break and then go with the next one. Why not that?
I don't know that. There was no excuse for that empty crowd. You would think there's enough political science students at universities. Those folks do have some supporters they could have, you know, invited into that arena. They could have said, hey, homeless of Cleveland, free air conditioning for the next hour, but you have to endure these people talking. You know, there's the price you have to pay for free air conditioning. But you at least would have the people in the audience.
But it's really too bad that the debate that was the best one was the one that was not watched, you know. So
certainly.
Well,
so
I watched the forum, like, was it on Tuesday night or Monday night, where they just, and it was like rapid fire, they just interviewed every candidate for like 3 minutes. It was on, I can't remember what channel it was on. It was on, I watched it on C-SPAN. That was really kind of interesting, but I don't think anybody came out the winner, so to speak. The most interesting part was just watching how they came up and they sat in a stool and talked to whoever the guy was that was doing the interviews. And I found the most interesting part was how comfortable they looked just sitting on a stool talking, and some of them looked very uncomfortable, like Chris Christie. But,
yeah.
So are we going to talk about the debate, or are we going
to? Well, that was the next thing. Let's move on to the big debate, the one that got the record viewership. Because I will say this, Fox built this thing up, and I think the whole poll deal made people a little more interested. And obviously, as much as Donald Trump's been talked about. Figured in too. So they had the big debate. Catherine, I'll let you have the first stab at this one. What were some of your impressions?
I think I was not overly impressed with anyone, but I was surprised by Jeb Bush's lack of punch. He was He seemed, I don't know if he was tired, but he just didn't have any spark. And I mean, if he's there, you know, go-to guy, if he's the guy that what do we call them? The rank and file Republicans or the, you know, are looking
establishment.
Establishment Republicans are looking at, then I think he has a long way to go to be on a stage during a general campaign and debating whomever the Democrats may select. I just found him to be dull, and actually I watched it and I was doing some other chores and stuff while I was watching it, but no one really struck me in all of them. No, you know, they were all kind of same old, same old.
Well, one thing about Jeb that I think is relevant is maybe the reason he's so lackluster, he hasn't appeared on the ballot in like 14 years. What, 2002, he would have run for re-election as Florida governor, and he hadn't been on a ballot in campaign since then, and I don't even know what that campaign was like. It's been so long ago. Maybe it was a very slam dunkish campaign where he didn't have to campaign that hard, didn't have to get in a big time debate. Probably definitely not in the primary. And if you look at 2002 GOP politics and 2015/16 GOP politics, the Tea Party is such more of a force. And so maybe this is just an environment he's never been in some ways, and hadn't been in over a decade and always. Tim, what were some of your impressions of the debate?
First of all, Jeb Bush has always been, like you say, and the guy's a policy wonk. That's the way he comes across. That's the way he's always come across. He's not going to have people jumping up and screaming his name, you know, or anything like that. He just doesn't excite people that way. That may be a bit of trouble for him when he gets out into the general election campaign. You got to be a bit more charismatic. The very first thing might have really hurt Trump more than anything, and that was the pledge, which he would not take. Megyn Kelly asked the first question and asked, "Will all of you right now take a pledge that you will support the Republican nominee and that you will not run as an independent?" And Trump immediately raised his hand and said, "I will not take that pledge." And he got booze. And that I think that hurt him more than anything. More than anything he said to her, anything he said the rest of the night. If I had to pick a winner in that debate, it was probably Rubio.
Yep.
Who was clearly... well, not clearly, but I think he was the best of the bunch. I think Kasich had a good night because he had a home crowd. They were cheering his every word. That arena was his. Scott Walker's a guy that didn't help himself at all. He needs to separate himself from, say, Jeb Bush if he wants to grab the establishment mantra and run with it. And he just didn't do that the other night. But again, he's not a charismatic kind of guy either. And he's not a commanding presence. Lindsey Graham in the first debate, oh, he didn't do himself any good. But Chris Christie and Rand Paul got in a shouting match practically at the beginning of the debate. Didn't help either one of them there. But I think the nighttime debate belonged to Rubio, even though Donald Trump dominated the thing. One time, Dr. Carson even complained that nobody was asking him anything because they just kept going back to Trump, and that's how that 2 hours went.
Yeah, and thinking back, I can't remember anything that that Scott Walker said. Like I don't re- I don't re- nothing I recall nothing from him at all throughout the whole thing. The thing about this Trump thing, though, so he refuses to do the pledge, and he said that if he's treated with respect, and he likes the candidate that's selected, then he will work to, he won't run as an independent, and he'll work to get that person elected. But then, you know, what, 24 hours later or 48 hours later, Eric Erickson disinvites him from the red state thing, just, you know, feeding into this, you know, not being polite to him. And, you know, I mean, I'm not going to criticize Eric Erickson because that would take, you know, all night. But they are sort of playing into his hand. If they keep, you know, disinviting him to things and not including him and criticizing him, the more likely it is that he'll run as an independent. And if he runs as an independent, I mean, that's the end of the, that's the end of the game, right? That's
the Yeah. All but what about seven states become swing states if Donald Trump ran as a strong third party candidate? It just divides the GOP vote. 45% or more of the vote stays in the Democratic column, and they're winning anything that even is remotely purple across the country. And so that's what
if they end up with a Republican who's one of these, you know, non-charismatic guys like Jeb Bush or Scott Walker, then it's that much more likely, you know what I mean? That splits the vote even more because they can't even attract people. Do you know what I mean? So I think, I mean, you know, all, you know, they can do whatever they want, but I think that this is the path to Donald Trump running as an independent by excluding him from these things and being rude to him, as he would say.
Yeah. There's so, like I said, there's so much to cover, and we could have picked any one of our topics here and covered it for the whole show. We can't do that. But you mentioned, Tim, that John Kasich did well, and I heard about how he defended expanding Medicaid and different things.
Mm-hmm.
Is he not hurting himself, though, in this primary? I mean, to me, it seems like he's setting himself up into being in the cabinet of a Democrat. Like, hey, we got to have a Republican,
well,
and John Kasich sounds like a reasonable guy. I mean, he doesn't sound like he's going to win a primary electorate votes.
But here's one reason John Kasich's a reasonable guy. He's from Ohio. And the pundits just keep reminding everyone that no Republicans ever won the White House without it. Well, the easiest way to win the White House next year is to have Kasich as the nominee. Now, I don't believe he's going to get the nomination. I think he got in a little bit late. But I think as a result of his performance the other night, he's going to move up from the 3, 4% level to the 7 to 10% level, and then we'll just see what happens. There's so many people in this race, guys, that maybe we should start looking now at who's got enough money to just hang around while others drop off. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, money's huge in this, and we hadn't really explored. We know Jeb Bush is, that's his biggest strength. NBC
right.
did a poll, and they did it with SurveyMonkey. It's the first poll taken after the debate. Now, it was a scientific online survey. Obviously, it wasn't on the side of their news page, and everybody just clicked as many times as they wanted. The more I went into it than that. But it had some results that don't quite match other polls. So that's why people have really called this thing into question. But it does show Donald Trump still leads. Ted Cruz surged to 13. Now, he's kind of the darling of red state. Ben Carson stayed strong. Carly Farina, which did well in the first debate, even if nobody was there and live to watch it, 8. Marco Rubio, 8. Jeb Bush falls to 7, and Scott Walker falls to 7. Those are two that I think kind of called these numbers into question. Catherine, can we trust this survey, or can we trust parts of this survey?
I think that, you know, we're gonna probably see some different styles of polling in the next 18 months or however long it is. It's 14 months, I guess, now. Because we know that the old style polling doesn't reach as many people because of cell phones and other things. So I think it'll be interesting to see how all this shakes out. I do think that Carly Fiorina probably knocked somebody out of that top 10. And so I guess, I mean, I think that all the polls are worth examining, and you just sort of take them into account and compare them to the other ones, and then end up somewhere with a combination of them. But I definitely think she's getting a lot of props for her performance. I wanted to say one more thing about Kasich. I think, I do think it's, you know, questionable whether you defend expanding Medicaid or whatever, but I think that what that wins him is authenticity. And that's not the most important thing in a primary, but it does help. Those people who tend to vote in primaries but aren't don't identify as Tea Party or as mainstream Republicans, but they like to vote in the primaries, they're going to be looking for someone who's authentic or who speaks to their issues. So I think I want to give some credit to him being at least authentic in what he was talking about and what his experience is as, you know, having been in Congress and been a governor.
Yeah, I'll say this too. I think he told his truth. And one thing that's great about that is it's a whole lot easier to keep your story straight.
Exactly.
If you just stick with your truth, it's hard to confuse it. Tim, this poll, I think Catherine's right. Carly Fiorina is doing better today than she was Wednesday before Thursday morning, and this poll reflects that. Looking at some of the other numbers, what are some things you think are on point, and what are some things that you may say misses the mark?
Well, I don't seriously believe that Ted Cruz is running second in national polling when he's been languishing down at, 2-4%. He has not made a jump like that. Outside of a strong closing statement the other night, I didn't really hear anything he did that helped anything at all. As far as he was concerned, he didn't stand out in any way. So I have to question him being second. And we both know that Bush and Walker are a lot higher than they are in this poll. Although I do believe that Carly Fiorina may take a little bit of a bump upward. And so might Rubio. Rubio's got to get in the game in Florida, and right now he's not in the game at all. I still think it's right that Trump's at 23, though. I believe he might have a hardcore 20%. Now, I think he's got just as hard a core of 80% that's opposed to him. but I believe he's got his 20%. What I don't think he can do is expand that. He's just too divisive. He's just too bold and brazen. He just rubs his detractors the wrong way, so that if candidates go to dropping out of the race, I don't see any of their supporters gravitating toward him. I see them going to the other candidates. So Trump is better off with a lot of candidates still in the race, and then a poll like this would be accurate.
Yeah, he's got to rack up a lot of voters, I'm sorry, a lot of delegates early in the process.
Early,
hope
yeah.
Some, more of these candidates stay around. He doesn't even have to have 17, 18 candidates. Even if it's 10, he could then still do pretty well. I think the number might be in the high 30s of what his, pretty decent potential universe of voter is. But then it's over 50 the people that will never vote for him. And so if it gets down to a one-on-one or even a three-person deal, he's in trouble. So he needs a bigger field. He needs to get those states where it's winner-take-all, the early ones. He needs to win those states and get those delegates, locked up. I mean, I tell you what, as a good Democrat, I'm rooting for him. But I'm, you know, hey, keep plugging away, because you're just helping us, because that's what it says in every poll, and I do believe that. I'll say some more things about that poll. I think that Ted Cruz is nowhere near that high, but I think this may be indicative of possibly this could be a poll where they found the right demographics. You know, 53% of the respondents are female, 47% male, or that's for the general electorate, but, you know, what it matched. You know, the age matched, and it got all the demographics right, but it got people that were much more focused, and those folks are not exactly going to reflect the electorate in their primary, and Ted Cruz does better among those kind of folks, and that's why I think his numbers are inflated. Also, Ben Carson, you know, he, you know, stayed in the game. A guy that really was hurting here, Rand Paul, he didn't even show up in these numbers. Chris Christie didn't even show up. So,
Dr. Paul has no money. He's running for re-election to the U.S. Senate. I think he's going to be one of the earliest dropouts. That's my prediction for you.
Well, and let's expound upon that, and I'll even give it to Catherine if she wants to first. Could he do so poorly in this presidential race that people in Kentucky are maybe not even conscious of it, but a little embarrassed about how poorly he does, and it hurts him in the Senate race? Catherine?
Oh, I think that's very possible. Absolutely. I mean, I think that if he, you know, shows up looking not well prepared and says, you know, a few too many bonehead things, and then, yeah, I do think that can hurt him.
Yeah, and Tim, a follow-up. If he starts to, the tarnish starts to come on Rand Paul, now, if we run just any old truck driver we find, that may not work. And you'll find out why I mentioned that later in the show if you don't already know. But does this make a Steve Beshear, a Crit Llewellyn, maybe even Allison Lundgren Grimes again, a better quality of candidate look at this race? And at what point do they have to decide Rand Paul's vulnerable?
Well, you know, just from a standpoint of putting together a staff and raising money, whether they decide it or not, anybody's going to run, and it's going to run a serious race to win, had better start thinking right this minute about running up there, because they're running out of time. I mean, here we are in going into mid-August now. And, you know, you gotta raise a significant amount of money, even in a state like Kentucky, to run a U.S. Senate race, because I guarantee you Rand Paul's got plenty of it. About one or two more debate performances like he had the other night is not going to help him. But right now I'm going to have to say he's pretty safe in that Senate race. I don't see anything yet that says he's not.
One thing I will think that helps those Democrats out that might be looking at it, because they have that odd year governor's election in November, it may give them till about Thanksgiving to get in. Now, if this were a state that didn't have that election and things were ramping up, they wouldn't have that extra time. But because all the money's going to the governor's race and the tension's going there, it buys them probably an extra quarter, maybe two quarters, to fall that they usually wouldn't have. Would you agree or disagree, Catherine, and then Tim?
Yeah, that's probably true. There's probably the game changes a little bit with that election in between.
I'm going to say no, it doesn't. I think anybody that's thinking about running for the U.S. Senate in Kentucky next year against Dr. Paul might ought to go ahead and seriously think about getting going.
Yeah, and hey, and remember, this is a political podcast, not a church choir. It's okay if we disagree,
right.
So I'm good with that. Well, let's keep the covering topics. I'm sure our guest will call in at some point, because he's always been such a great guest in the past. But let's go on to Red State Convention. It was in all of us. Our home state. Catherine, you live in Atlanta. Tim, you travel to Atlanta. I certainly know the way.
But none of us attended the Red State Convention, but we read about it because not only do we see it in the political stuff we read, it was in our local papers because the AJC covered it like it was the Democratic or Republican National Convention came to town. I wonder if our show, if we held a little convention, we would get such coverage because Jim Galloway doesn't know who we are. First off, just in general, Catherine, were you kind of surprised at how big a thing this became in Atlanta?
No. I mean, you know, we're a red state. And Eric Erickson generates a lot of attention. And, no, I wasn't surprised that it garnered so much attention. It didn't get any of my attention. Except that I didn't leave my apartment because I was afraid. Didn't want to run into people.
Well, Tim, is it just me or does it seem like the Republicans are better or more, maybe not better, but maybe Republican voters are more interested in these type of conventions? I mean, they've had CPAC. Now they've got this. There's probably 10 other ones I'm forgetting. Whereas Democrats don't have as many of these type of things, it seems like. I mean, Netroots Nation kind of exists, but it seems like they either get more coverage or have more attendance or whatever.
Let's be fair here. I mean, there were 9 presidential candidates coming to this state, plus the story between Erickson and Donald Trump was huge. It was like the top political story of the weekend that Donald Trump was snubbed from a conservative convention in Georgia by Eric Erickson, who everyone knows. So, you know, it got a lot of coverage, and I think it should have. But I mean, for those reasons. I mean, if the 5 Democratic candidates all came to Atlanta for a big public forum speaking thing, it would be covered maybe not quite as well because, as Catherine said, we are, after all, a red state, and Georgia's going to be very important next year in the election because there's some talk it might start turning a little bit purple for the presidential election. But no, I think they covered it just about right. It should have had a lot of coverage. Don't you think so, David?
Oh, yeah, I do. I'm kind of jealous. I mean, I wish there was some big Democratic gathering in Atlanta.
That,
I know.
What's that thing called that there's a big Democratic convention. Where was it held this year? In Texas, I think. A big progressive thing. What's it called?
The Netroots?
Netroots.
Well, they do it. Netroots Nation, that's one of the big ones. And they do have things. They just don't seem to get the coverage. And maybe they're in other cities. You know, just had. I know they had one in Pittsburgh, I believe.
They have a lot more attendance than this red state thing. I think there was only room for something like, I heard, you know, hundreds, not thousands of people there was room for in that, in the Intercontinental for the
100 people?
Hundreds.
No, several hundred.
700. Less than 1,000.
Oh, because I was like, if it was just 100 people, Eric Erickson.
I said hundreds. It was hundreds.
Oh, hundreds. Okay. Not under 1,000. 999 or less. Yeah, okay. Because I was like, if he can't find a better venue, he can call me for a fee. I'll help him find a venue that can hold more than 100 people.
I mean,
that's pitiful.
You know, I think when they planned it was. I don't think it was expected to be as big a deal. But as you know, as it came, got closer, and there was all this brouhaha, and then you know the other things that are going on that they focused on, I think there was just, you know, more attention, and so that, but there was still only room for somewhere fewer than 1,000 people.
Yeah.
I know.
Okay.
That,
and obviously,
I know that hotel. It's, there's not a lot of big spaces.
Yeah, because so, I mean, obviously he could have had it at the sweat box known as the center stage or lots of other places and gotten, you know, about 900 there, and it would have been you could have seen everything and things like that, but it wouldn't have had all the convention space where probably every right-wing cause, you know, spreads out their wares and what have you. And that's the part that I would have found kind of curious. You know how you'll see like things like the Daily Show or whatever, they'll go around and cover some of this and you go, just I don't know what to make of this. And I would have liked to have seen some of that. If I would have gone down, that would probably been more interesting than some of the speeches, if you will. Well, the big thing was Eric Erickson disinvited the leading GOP candidate. And he seemed to disinvite him, the way I interpret the words, is because Megyn Kelly is a Fox person, not really because she's female and his comments could have been negative towards women. It was because it was a Fox News contributor. Catherine, do you think that's kind of why Eric Erickson, that was the rationale he used?
I think that they were just looking for a reason to, you know, disinvite Donald Trump. And it would have been, I mean, they could have said it was because he was rude to women, but they're all rude to women, so I don't know how they could really rationalize it. So, using the Fox News angle was probably the one that someone advised them to use, I suspect.
Yeah, because I think somebody put a poll out and they said, you know, if you look at who the GOP voters trust, like 80% of GOP voters trust Fox News. I mean, it's kind of one thing they all agree on. Tim, what do you find it curious, or what's your take on Eric Erickson disinviting Donald Trump?
Well, for one thing, yes, Republicans love Fox News. That's their network, and they're not going to take kindly to it when someone says something disparaging about any of the favorite announcers on that network, even if it is another Republican. Erickson made an interesting statement, though. He said, I don't want my daughter in the room with Donald Trump.
Yeah.
He like a laser beam, he kind of focused in on what Trump said about Megyn Kelly. It was kind of a disparaging thing that Trump was sort of indicating maybe she was so snotty toward him because she was like having a menstrual cycle or something. Is that what you gathered, Catherine, about Trump's statement?
That's generally.
Yeah. Right. He said she was bleeding from somewhere, you know, so.
Her eyes and then whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Wherever.
Yeah.
He played Mad Libs with us.
It was distasteful, and it was offensive, but it was, you know.
You know, what did anybody
expect? It was no
worse
than a lot of the things that those Republicans say about women.
Yeah.
I mean, well, it was no worse than some of the things that they've said about Hillary Clinton, that they've said about Wendy Davis, that they've said about, you know, any number of, Nancy Pelosi is constantly under attack, so. To use rude to women as their argument would be less than authentic, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think kind of the thing is most of what Donald Trump said is just in different times has just not been presidential. Is it tacky, crass, rude,
can
whatever?
I
it's
ask
just,
this?
So much of it's just not presidential. Tim?
Let me ask this. What did anybody expect Trump to do? If any of those folks are surprised, I mean, he's being Donald Trump. This is who this guy is. This is the way he talks, the way he acts. He's a very blustery personality. He's made a lot of money on television doing this. And this is what he does. That's his comfort zone. And this has actually rode him to the top of their polls. Not that people are fond of what he's saying, but that, well, at least this guy's saying something. I've had people tell me that.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, it's. I remember that there were two guys, regular guys. They were morning DJs on 96 Rock, probably about 10 years ago. And they would get in trouble. They would say the most off-color stuff. They had great ratings, and they'd say off-color stuff. They'd get thrown off the radio, and, you know, their hardcore fans would beg to get them back on, and they'd come back on, and they'd plug along for a while, and then they'd say something else, you know, derogatory, distasteful, and they'd get thrown back off. And it's kind of like, this is how Donald Trump's behaving, maybe more of in a political way. But is that really what we want of a president? Somebody that you know, functions like a morning shock jock?
That's why I believe he's got a hard core of support and just as hard a core that's opposed to him and will not under any circumstances support him, even if their preferred candidate falls out of the race. That's why I don't believe he can build on what he's got and build up enough momentum to get enough delegates to actually go on and win the Republican nomination, even if he has some stay in power and stays in the race, right?
I mean, the GOP, if not the political world, seems to revolve around Donald Trump at this point. You know, even you watch Inside Politics and Meet the Press and other shows, and Democrats don't even get covered. Now, it's not like they're the minor leagues or anything. It's just like the ball game is watching this crazy man do his thing. And I think also there's a little bit of inevitability to Hillary Clinton, and so therefore it's kind of like we're just waiting to see who's going to run against her. I think that's also part of the reason the coverage you know, gets more GOP leaning, because it's just that's where the ball game is.
You hit on something, Catherine. Let me ask you this: even though Trump did terribly in that second debate, he still dominated that debate, didn't he?
Yes.
It was all about him.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter what you say. It does, of course, matter what you say, but in these kind of circumstances, getting the most attention, and it can be as important as saying the right thing.
Yep, sure can.
I mean, if you're memorable, like I said, I don't remember anything Scott Walker said. All I remember about Jeb Bush is that he sounded, you know, unprepared and kind of dense. And Ben Carson sounded crazy. And but Trump, though he did sound a little crazy, he was authentically Trump. Like, again, like what we said earlier, the thing about Trump is he won't forget what he said, because he always says what's the reality for himself.
The very next day at work, I talked to some people who are not political people, just average working folks, and a few of them watched the debate, and the only thing they wanted to talk about was Donald Trump. There's your proof.
Yeah, it's there's the oxygen in the room, and he sucked it all up. They call him a blowhard, but he sucks it in at the same time. Well, early in the week, before this poll, I believe it was mainly Insider Advantage. I think WSB also did a poll. They did a Democratic poll as well. I always wish they had done a head-to-head number for the general just to see. But I sent y'all all these polls. Now, it's debatable, do the GOP numbers matter as much after this debate? But I do see some things that were interesting. The Texas and the Florida polls, the hometown guys didn't seem to do that well in the poll. Cruz and Perry weren't, you know, lighting it up in Texas. Particularly, I think Perry didn't do well at all in the Texas poll. And in the Florida poll, Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio really didn't dominate either of those. I think Donald Trump, if I'm not mistaken, all of those polls I sent you from across the South, Trump led in every one of them. Do home states matter much anymore, Tim?
Well, now, on Texas, one little correction. Cruz was actually leading that poll by 1 point over Trump.
It was Rick Perry that
Perry
ended it.
Setting at 2%.
And I sent that note to y'all. I remember. That's why I got confused. Rick Perry, the former governor, did terrible.
Yeah, he's done right now. He may not know that yet, but he is. And down in Florida, Rubio has to beat Bush. He has to beat Bush in Florida, and he's sitting back there at 7%. And if he don't at least win his home state of Florida, which is early in the process, he's done.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're right, David. The home states mean a lot. They do. You got to win those.
Yeah, but Trump is hurting a lot of the folks. Catherine?
Even though I maybe intellectually don't think it matters, I will say, well, if they can't even win their home state, how do they expect me to vote for them? You know what I mean? So it may not make sense in an intellectual fashion, but I think our attitude is like, if they can't win their, you know, friends and neighbors at home, how do they expect to win, you know, Georgia or whatever other states they might be. You know what I mean? I just think that people tend to expect candidates to win their home states.
Something like those that know him best or know her best.
Remember all the flack that Al Gore got for not winning Tennessee in
cost him the election.
Yeah.
Any state other than the it cost him the election.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, guys, it's getting kind of late in the hour. I've sent some text around, but we won't get into all that. But Mississippi had their primary elections. And, Tim, you kind of noticed this quicker than the other two of us did. We thought one of the two ladies, Valerie or Vicky, their names, the other one I believe is Vicky Slater. We kind of thought one of those two ladies would win the Democratic primary nomination, but a little bit of a shock happened. Fill us in, Tim.
Oh, Lord. Well, we had a truck driver by the name of Robert Gray on the ballot. He paid the qualifying fee, which I don't think is very much, maybe $300, which I would have to question that. If the qualifying fee were steeper, it would probably keep folks like him off the ballot. Because here we have a truck driver, 46 years old. He's never held political office. Nobody's ever heard of him. He spent no money. He did not campaign. And he didn't even vote because he said he was too busy. And he easily dispatched the party's anointed candidate for governor. As to what happened, you know, who knows? Maybe it was that he was a male. And maybe it was that his name was easy to remember. it could have been something like that. I tell you, the Democratic Party, there was a cartoon that I saw, and it showed a moving van, a truck, and it said Democratic Party moving, blah, blah, blah. And someone was saying, well, at least now we have a driver for the truck. You know, I mean, they are having some great fun with this. I mean, it was going to be hard enough to beat Governor Brian. Anyway, he's setting up with $3 million in the bank. Very popular, but this, you got to worry about other candidates when you have somebody like this at the top of the ticket. You know, we've talked about before Jim Hood, the only statewide elected Democrat attorney general, I believe he is down there, and he's held office for a good long time, and he survived through all of this. They keep running candidates at the top of the ticket like this. It could beat him.
Yeah, I thought, and maybe even some state house and state senate seats. I'll tell you, Tim, if Robert Gray will get a chimpanzee and campaign with him all across the country in the truck, I'll drive over to Mississippi and help out one Saturday.
He couldn't afford the rent. He don't have a dime. He couldn't afford to rent a chimp. He probably couldn't afford something to eat when he was on the road campaigning. Jeez. And he won easily.
Well, yeah. That reminds me. Remember a few years ago, Catherine, there was a South Carolina Senate race. And there was a guy, and I forgot his name, and he was kind of like the insider's pig. The guy that was supposed to be the guy, Nick, maybe it was a Nick, I don't know. It was somebody they thought, well, this guy will win, he's kind of our candidate, and Green, was it Alvin Green, got on the ballot. And Alvin Green won, and I think a lot of times, and this may have been the case for Vicki Slater and Valerie, the lady that had been in the I believe Navy was a doctor. I mean, those were two solid candidates, but I got the idea they didn't have any money, and one of them thought they were just going to be the standard bearer. I think Vicki Slater kind of thought she was the insider's choice. And so the election started Wednesday, and they just really didn't campaign much, save their money, and they thought just that everybody that they went and met at the JJ dinner and the Democratic picnic and all these folks – would carry them through, but they forgot that, you know, everybody's voting for sheriff and county commissioner and all this other stuff, and these folks didn't know either one of the ladies that were much better qualified. And so they just went and saw three names on the ballot, and Tim, maybe you're right. Maybe the two ladies, since they're both ladies and they both had V names, they divided their vote, and that let Robert Gray push through. Catherine, do you think that sometimes Democrats in the South, where we should be just having one candidate, sometimes they kind of assume they'll get through to the general?
Oh, absolutely. I think there's a lot of times when candidates are sort of in their own echo chamber, and they, I think not just in primaries, but in generals too. I mean, I think we saw that in 2014. I think a lot of us really thought that both Jason Carter and Michelle Nunn were going to do much better than they did, because we listen to the people around us, and we tend to, some of us tend to, you know, live in a bubble of people who believe like we do. And so, and I think that's even more so true in primaries in a state like Mississippi, where, you know, Democrats have been weakened over the past few years. So those two candidates probably thought, well, it's just going to be the two of us, and one of us is going to win, and we'll move on to the general. But they weren't expecting this guy to come out from nowhere. And I do think that I think a lot of times in the South, women don't do as well. Just because they have women's names. Too bad, but. So I think all those things work together against those two women candidates and for, what's his name, Robert Gray?
Right.
Robert Gray. Maybe they thought he was the guy from the book and the movie. You know, it's gotten so much attention. Maybe they thought it was that guy.
I think he got that nomination because he is male. I do. Now, I was watching Vicki Slater's campaign. I friended her campaign on Facebook. It was there. She had a nice website. She did a little bit of advertising. She did go around the state some to different areas campaigning. And I think she ended up with like 30% of the primary vote. I mean, you know, it's just one of those things you scratch your head about. And it's one of those deals that just show how bad the Democratic Party is doing in some of these southern states. Now, we have just about been annihilated. What is the state party down there doing?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I mean
at least
this was why.
Except that,
at least we ran our best candidates here, you know.
Yeah, I mean, but the state party shouldn't be promoting one primary candidate over another. If they're all running in the Democratic primary, they should all get equal treatment. It is a $300. I looked it up while we were talking.
Yeah, $300. If it had been $4,200 like it is here, that'd have kept him off the ballot, right?
Although maybe he would have spent money knowing he could have been the nominee. Because, you know, once he forked over the cash, he would have, he still would have got what he got. Now, I think what Kendra's right about, the state party now has to try to tune this guy up the best they can to do what he can. Not that they're going to dump a whole bunch of money, but like you said, they've got to get him to be respectable enough so Jim Hood doesn't suffer. Maybe some tight state house and state senate races, maybe a county commission race in one of the bigger counties. They don't lose those. So they're going to have to try to prop this guy up the best they can, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what else they can do now, and let's just hope he's not an Alvin Green type that says bizarre things. I haven't heard of anything bizarre that he said. Except it was cute on election night. He was the most surprised person in the state that he won. He was stunned. When he was interviewed by National Public Radio, you could tell he was stunned. He never expected it. So
yeah,
what
could be a more ridiculous thing to say or do than be running for governor and not vote for yourself?
Well, I will tell you, if within the next year he comes out wanting to make action figures of himself, he will be the most ridiculous thing. Until he does that, Alvin Green still gets the title. Making
action figures
of himself. Remember Alvin Green? He wanted to make action figures of himself. This is after he lost to, Jim DeMint or whoever he ran against. He wanted to do action figures. Who'd want that toy? Get real. I mean, you know.
Did Jesse Ventura
the Jesse Ventura doll was bad enough. Yeah, but Jesse Ventura was the body. I mean, yeah, they had action figures of him back in 84 because he's a wrestler. You know, there was wasn't a jump that far. But, you know, this character. Hey, you know the show with Clay Aiken? If somebody could get to filming, and they should have been filming Tuesday night, and watch that campaign, I guarantee you there's an hour or two of footage there that would be compelling, you know, somebody trying to get this guy around the campaign. You know, that's sometimes these campaigns are more fascinating than the good ones because they're just so strange. So, I don't know. Well, it's been a good show. Sorry about, you know, not having better Mississippi insider knowledge. We will try to get that rectified here shortly so we can bring that to you on the Kudzu Vine. But, Catherine, Tim, anything else before we go?
No.
That's it for me.
Pretty much a show.
All right.
Till then,
night,
for the Kudzu Vine.
Good night, fellas.
Good night.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in